Now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Corey from Bytheio.
Good evening. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Corey. Hydration. May 12th, 2003, I took my last drink. And I think it's important to mention my very first experience, true experience with alcohol before I move into what happened next. I was 12 years old when I experienced my first blackout. And it's what I remember, other than what I don't remember from blacking out, was how it felt when I took the first couple pulls off that bottle of rum. It was warm going down, and it made the coldness of the world just disappear. And a switch flipped in my brain, and my brain told me, it said to me, if this is how this feels, we're going to do this for a long time. 19 years later, I found myself, by God's grace and mercy, at Cornerstone Recovery in New Hampshire, California. And there I learned, through the help of the counselors there and the other residents, that I was an alcoholic. The first 30 days there was very confusing to me, because I didn't understand what I was supposed to be doing. I was very lost. About 3 weeks into the program there, I remember I went up to one of the counselors, and I asked him, I said, Gilbert, I said, I'm lost. I don't know who I am, what I am, where I'm supposed to be. And he looked me straight in the eye, and I'll never forget what he said to me. I said, well, you're a good person, aren't you? You know, in my heart of hearts, I knew that to be true. And he said, then act like it. And that hit me right between the eyes like a sledgehammer, because I realized at that point, either I had forgotten, never learned, or didn't know how to act like it. And that's when the program was introduced to me. I was given a big book. I had a sponsor within the first 4 months of my recovery, after I got out of the recovery home. He took me through the steps after he had me read the first 164 pages. And his philosophy behind that, or what he passed on to me, was you're not going to work the steps to get sober, you're going to work the steps to stay sober. And I didn't understand that at the time, but what I came to understand later on was that my problem wasn't drinking. It wasn't the other issues. It was my thinking and the way that I lived. And from that moment, that very first moment at 12 years old, my brain had been rewired to where if there was anything that I felt or experienced that was uncomfortable, I went to that feeling. I went back to that same thing. And that was the beginning. He took me through the steps, and he showed me that there was a different way to live. He explained to me that he wasn't doing this for me, he was doing this for him, another concept that I didn't understand until later. And he basically brought me into a family, into a fellowship that took me in, didn't care where I came from, didn't care who I was, didn't care where I'd been, they were just happy that I was there. And it was amazing from the very first moment that clicked in me, because I realized that I was home. You know, I think that I thought in my mind that I'd worked the first step many times before that, because it was easy for me to admit that there was a problem, especially when I was in front of the judge. Yes, Your Honor, I have a problem. Give me a program. Yes, Your Honor, I have a program. Or yes, the probation officer, I have a problem. Give me a program. But until I finally worked that first step with my sponsor, I wasn't willing to accept who I was and what I had become. In working that first step, I came to understand that I was powerless over alcohol. And it wasn't too hard to make that connection with the unmanageability, because as I was, as my mind was clearing, all the wreckage of my past was becoming really clear to me. And in that, it was very uncomfortable. And there was a lot of times where I wanted to bolt. I wanted to run. I didn't want to go through it. I didn't want to feel those same feelings that I'd been running from 19 years. And my sponsor would always tell me, he's like, you're right where you need to be. And I'd ask him, where's that? And he'd smile. And he'd say it again. I didn't realize that what he was telling me was I was right where I needed to be. And I didn't need to worry about where I was going. I didn't need to sweat where I had been. I just needed to stay in the present. And he used to say, stay where your hands are. You know, in that time, I realized that if I wanted to stay sober, I needed to work on me. And so as he took me through the steps and he presented this concept to me of a higher power, one that I wasn't foreign to, but one I really had no use for those 19 years. I mean, to me, I didn't understand who this higher power was, who this God was, and why he'd want anything to do with me. But I realized that he didn't go anywhere. It was me that was running. And when I stopped running, I had to face all the stuff that I was running from. He allowed me to make a choice to live in the solution, that being my higher power. And as I read those pages in that book, in that beautiful big blue book, I started to realize that it was about me. I mean, I'd turn those pages and I'd read something and it was like I was in those pages. It was everything that I would read, it applied to me. Scary at first, but at the same time comforting. Because I didn't know, like I said, I didn't know who I was or what I was doing or any of that stuff. As it turns out, after about the fifth or sixth month in sobriety, the dry, I became stark raving sober. Yeah, I wasn't drinking, but man, things got real. And I didn't know what to do with it. Again, my sponsor was there. And he explained to me that this is the process that you go through if you want to be free. You see, I understand today that I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But that my disease, my alcoholism, is something that I will always live with. And I must be vigilant. You see, I'm granted that daily reprieve, and it's contingent on my spiritual condition, something that I need to do each and every day if I want to enjoy that freedom. And as he took me through the steps, and I'll never forget the time, it was in the Denny's parking lot in Hanford, California, when he broke me down and got me on my knees and had me do a third step prayer. And I'm sure you've heard this before, but something happened. I felt like this weight had been removed, that this incredible burden had been lifted from my shoulders, and I wasn't scared anymore. It was very comforting. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it was a setup, because as soon as that was accomplished, he said, now it's time to get to work, and he had me start writing. And I procrastinated. I tried to put it off. I didn't see what the point of rehashing all this pain and this suffering and this stuff that I had done, the stuff that's happened that had happened to me, I didn't see what the point was in having to relive it. But he told me, you need to pray and you need to trust, because you've just surrendered your will and your life to the care of the God as you understand him, and he'll take care of you. I set forth on working those steps, working the fourth and fifth step, and at every turn, when I would feel discouraged, I would feel scared, or I didn't want to look at something, he would return me in the direction of my higher power. And that gave me the strength to continue forward. And the most amazing thing happened in that process. The power that my past held over me was removed. You see, before I'd worked the steps, if I had thought about my past or if I thought about the things that had happened to me, it was like getting socked in the gut. And it was a feeling that I didn't like. It was a feeling that was so uncomfortable that it reminded me of why I drank in the first place. But once I had worked those two steps, that fourth and fifth step, I could still think about that stuff. I could still remember it. It was still a part of me. But it didn't have that power. It didn't have that drive over me anymore. About 6 months into recovery, into my sobriety, I was voluntold to get a sober's position. The AA Railroad works very well. And I was grateful for it because I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't been introduced to being a service. And it was very simple. I was to stand there at the meeting and greet people at the door. And before that, I was to arrive early and make the coffee. And in my mind, it was a commitment. And my sponsor fed me this line that, well, you know, if you don't show up, nobody will make the coffee. And if nobody makes a coffee, you're going to have a lot of pissed off alcoholics. Do you want that on your conscience? And so I kind of ran with that. I didn't like it because I wasn't comfortable in that position. I wasn't comfortable making coffee or shaking people's hands, you know, greeting strangers. But it was part of that process that was necessary. So in the beginning, I made the coffee really strong. I figured everybody's going to share tonight. You know, that was my ego coming out, and that was my untreated alcoholism still coming through. But I kept that commitment for 3 months until a secretary position opened up. I was still working the steps, and I wasn't sure if I would be able to do it right. Part of my brain said, do these people know who they're giving this key to this church to? Do they know who they're putting in charge and in responsibility? And my sponsor again said, you know what, you just do the next indicated right thing. I was able to do that for the next year until that commitment was up. And once that was up, I thought, oh, I'm done. I'm free. I don't have to be responsible anymore. And he said, well, there's a Sunday night candlelight meeting in Lemoore that needs a secretary. I think you'd be good for that. And you know, there were nights in that first year, in that second year, where life on life's terms wasn't very comfortable, it wasn't very appealing, and it was hard. And the last place I wanted to be was at this candlelight meeting on Sunday nights. And there'd be nights where I would literally almost be sick to my stomach because I didn't want to go. I'd be on my pity pot. Or I would just simply want to pull the covers over my head and go to sleep. But I went because, again, that commitment, that philosophy of making that commitment and sticking to it was instilled in me. And so I went on those nights that I didn't want to go. And by the time I left, I felt wonderful. Usually because I heard a story from somebody else that made my problems seem really small. You know, and it gave me that dose of gratitude that I needed to make it to that next 24 hours. You see, while I was working these steps, I also was introduced to a concept that described me to a T. And it was the self-centered, self-seeking nature of my alcoholism. And I realized that what I needed to do each and every day before anything commenced, before my day started, was to pray to my higher power that I be removed, that I get out of the way. And that was evident to me because everything that I had come to understand throughout working those first few steps and getting to that place where I had a better idea of what I was up against, that when I was in the driver's seat, I was going to go the wrong way. Time and time again. I didn't need to be reminded of that too many times. But even in early sobriety, I would take that wheel back. I thought I was cured. Or I thought that I didn't need to do the things that were required of me because things were good. But I was reminded when things weren't so good, again, when life was on life's terms, or having to live it, that I needed this program. That I needed the people in it. You know, my sponsor moved away at about 4 years in my recovery, my sobriety, after I had completed the steps the first time. And, you know, he'd left me with a really powerful legacy in terms of what it meant to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, his motto, he'd always say, was trust in God, clean house, and be of service to others. And it was on that foundation that I continued the journey. I found another sponsor who actually helped me to get deeper into the service work, which I believe to be one of the most important aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous, and as a recovering alcoholic, it's been fundamental in my sobriety. And it's taken me some wonderful places. You know, I started out as the secretary, or actually as the greeter and the coffee maker, became a secretary. When a position became open in my home group, which at the time was 10th Avenue, a world-famous men's group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a lot of ego there. I became the GSR. And in that, my sponsor, who was also very active in service, started to take me up to the area, up in Sacramento. And I started to see how Alcoholics Anonymous worked on a different level. And I started to understand what the traditions were about. And he took me through those traditions as if they were as important, and they are, as the steps. And after those traditions kind of set in, he handed me the service manual and said, okay, now we're going to study the concepts. I was like, does this stuff never end? And I'm glad that it doesn't. I was a GSR for about a year, and at the time, the DCM, the district committee member of District 49 in Hanford in Kings County, went away on leave or on death. He was in the military. And so there was a vacancy. And again, it was suggested by someone to me that I would be good for that position. Anytime you tell an alcoholic they'd be good for something, it's a great way to sell it. You know, even if you don't think that you are or don't think that you're worthy, you just kind of brush that ego a little bit, and all of a sudden you have this new position. I didn't realize what it entailed at the time, but as I was going through the service manual with my sponsor, I started to realize how important it was to be a part of that structure that helps ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous stays open, that there are meetings for that alcoholic out there who's still suffering to find. You know, and in doing that, I was privileged and blessed to see places like Alaska, you know, going to Prosser, the Pacific Regional AA Service Assembly, go to Spokane, Washington, to the Pacific Forum. And there I discovered that I was one of many. You know, I would be in a room with 1,400 other sober alcoholics trying to conduct a business meeting. And if you've ever had the privilege of doing that in such a large group, you know that the presence of the higher, or the group conscience and the God conscience is definitely very important. But it moved me when, through a translator in Portland, Oregon, at this process that I went to, shared with the group that she was grateful for the process and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. She lives in this village in Russia. And it was because of the work that the central office and that New York was doing, and that Alcoholics Anonymous was doing as a whole, that allowed that book, that wonderful book of ours, to be translated into a language that she could understand. And as she stood up there, she began to cry, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house because everybody could feel where she was coming from. They could feel her heart and the gratitude when she said, I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and each and every one of you in here. That was just one of the many experiences that I was fortunate enough to have through my travels. And, you know, the group taught me how to be a person among a group. Getting into service taught me how to be a person among my community. And what I didn't realize along the way through that process was that I was learning how to live life. A lot of the things that I never learned, because at 12 years old, I had abandoned a lot of those life skills and never bothered to pick any of them up. So at the age of 31, when I became sober, I was still very much that child in a man's body. So I didn't know how to speak to people. I didn't know how to communicate with the world around me. And I didn't know how to function very well in it. And it was through these rooms. It was in these rooms with these people, with you people, that guided me along, that showed me that I wasn't alone. And that encouraged me to take chances. You know, encouraged me to be honest and to become willing to do things that would continue to allow me to grow in my sobriety. So around about 5 years, I fell in love. And it almost killed me. I don't recommend that to anybody. And what I recognized happened, and this was through a lot of additional step books that came very soon after, was that I became very spiritually arrogant with the time that I had. I was 5 years sober. I was ready for this relationship. I hadn't been in a relationship for 9 years, not to mention a healthy one, or one that resembled any kind of functionality. And so I dove in, you know, both feet, so to speak, and the insanity of that first drink returned. I didn't pick up, I didn't drink. But that stark raving sobriety that I referred to earlier came back in a flash. And those behaviors that I had thought were in check, that I thought had disappeared, all of a sudden they started to creep in too. And then I started to realize I wasn't attending my home group. I wasn't working with sponsees. I wasn't being held accountable in the rooms that I need to hold me accountable. And when this relationship ended very abruptly and very quickly, it took a piece of me with it. And I'm not gonna try to say that, you know, well, by God's grace and mercy, I knew where to go. And I came back into the rooms. And granted, I had only removed myself from these rooms for a good 3 to 6 months. But in that time, that unmanageability had returned. And that wreckage of the past became wreckage of the present. And it was almost back to square one again. Because I realized that those things that I maybe had not covered the first time that I did the steps, I needed to work through, I needed to address. And if nothing else, and then I remember talking to a person who said, you need to do an inventory on your relationships. So, because if you don't, you're going to be unpacking that same baggage in every relationship that you go into. I didn't like that. You know, because I thought, here I was at 5 years, I'd worked these steps, I was in service, you know, I was a card-carrying member of Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever that is, and I had, you know, I was there. I never felt more like a newcomer than I did, again, at that 5-year mark. And I realize now how close I was to slipping and losing everything. So I did what I was told. I got back into the routine that I had established, or that was established for me from the beginning. And I started to call my sponsor, and he pulled this on me. He said, you need to call me every day. And I'm like, who are you? But he pointed out to me that I'd forgotten how to make a commitment. You know, I've forgotten how to be accountable, not just to myself, but to my program. So again, I did the next indicated right thing. I didn't like it, but I called him for 30 days. And then he said, okay, it's time to get to work again. I got another service position as a coffee maker. I didn't go to the greeter. I wasn't going to do that again. But I started to make coffee again. It was back to basics. And as I worked through that process, and I started to trust again and believe in my higher power that he was directing this, something amazing happened. One of many things. You see, I'd been working in the field as a drug and alcohol counselor for about 3 years at that time. And the place that I had worked at, they had sent me to go to school to get certified. And it wasn't something that I chose, and I stand by that to this day, because it's not something that I would have wanted to do at that time. And I didn't realize that what I was doing was the path is being laid for me, because I didn't have to do a lot of work for it. I mean, here's these people, they believed in me enough to pay whatever it costs to get my certification. And so once I had that, and I'd worked at this this program for almost 4 years, one of the people that had come through the program, probably about the first year that I was there, gave me a call. And see, he was working for Tulare County, and he's working as extra help. Make a long story short, he said, they're going to be hiring some counselors soon. You know, why don't you put in an application? So I did. And through that process, I ended up getting hired. And that's not the important part of the story. What's the important part is, through that process and through this person, I met my wife, who I've been married to be 5 years in May. I don't know if she would be talking. You know, the hardest place to work a program is at home. it's relatively easy to do it amongst our fellows, at least I think so, to some degree. But this changed my life. And it was because of the work that I had done, doing the inventory on my relationships, doing the next indicated right thing, listening to what my sponsor told me, even when I didn't want to, or didn't see the reason behind it. It allowed me to get into this relationship. And for the first time, and I don't want to throw the word functional out there too loosely, I was in a relationship that was absent from all the dysfunction that I had formerly known. There wasn't jealousy. There wasn't insecurity. There was trust. There was communication. You know, all these things that I do believe now had been instilled in me because of this program, because of the principles of the steps, because of the principles of the traditions. And she had 3 children at the time. Well, I wasn't ready for that. They are my adopted kids. I love them as they are my own. And they have also been a tremendous gift in my life. I walked into it blindly, willingly, and I'm glad that I did, even in the time that it didn't seem like it was the best thing to do. But I believed. You know, and when I didn't know what to do, I came to these rooms. Or I picked up that phone. And I talked to people that had been there, or had been through it, or were going through it. But that's the thing. I needed that experience, strength, and hope of what it was at this point, not just to be a husband, but what it was to be a father. Which ensued a whole other inventory. On December 3rd, 2009, my daughter Eleanor was born. She's 4 now. She's probably the most amazing thing, along with my other children, that I could ever been blessed with. I wasn't supposed to be able to have children, and so I consider her to be a miracle. And whenever I get too heavenly high that I'm no earthly good, this little girl has a knack of bringing me right back down to where I need to be. And in this thing, I found that I had been given one I was always looking for, and that was a family. So, happily married, you know, 4 kids, 2 dogs. We bought a house. Escrow closed 7 years to the day of my sobriety birthday. Yeah. God shot. I don't believe in coincidences. I believe in luck. And you know, this thing called a home became the new challenge. Because I've been living with this family. We've been, you know, we had lived in various places, but we were renting, you know, or we were just staying. We didn't actually have an established home. And this is around, about 7.5 years. Here comes that spiritual arrogance again. See, there's a theme in this that I really want to express. I have a tendency to wander off. And I wander off long enough until it becomes too painful. Then I run my ass all the way back in here like it's on fire. I don't recommend that to anybody, and I don't suggest that to anybody. It's not a really fun way to live. And I wish I could say it was the last time that I ever did that. But I learned the hard way. Nobody can relate to that, can they? And once again, it was time for a new round of inventory. It was time for a new commitment. I had grown apart from the sponsor that I had at that time, and you know, I believe everything is for a season. And it was time to face the facts. I was sponsorless. I was sponsee-less. And I was almost drunk. Because again, that stark raving sobriety, I was crazy. Just ask anybody, they'll tell you. So it was time to recommit. And it was that last time when I wandered into Bridge Street Drunks Only, as I had moved to Visalia, and it was I needed a place to plant some roots, that I had that same feeling that I had when I went to that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, 7 years earlier. And that was that feeling of hope. It was that feeling that I was home. And you know what? People weren't, they didn't care where I'd been. You know, they didn't care what I'd been up to. They were just glad to see me. And that was, it wasn't easy to walk back into the rooms sober. Not having gone back out and drunk, but just walking back in there knowing that I had walked away from something or strayed from the path on my own without, you know, any help from anybody else. Nobody pushed me out. And so where I come to, or where I find myself these days, it will be 11 years without a drink of alcohol this coming May. And that's for Alcoholics Anonymous. I find that I struggle with commitment. I find that I struggle with balance. You know, working full time, having a family, you know, a big family, dealing with a teenager now, and the younger kids. But that's not an excuse. It's not a justification. It doesn't give me permission to not stay connected. I do still attend meetings. I usually travel over to Hanford or go up to Fresno sometimes. It's difficult to attend meetings in the area, but that also is not an excuse. But I realize today that, again, that daily reprieve, that 24 hours, is not guaranteed if I don't put the work in. If I don't wake up every morning and say thank you and please and do the same thing when I lay my head down at night. Somewhere around that first 6 months when I started to begin working the steps, the true miracle of this program occurred. The obsession to drink was removed. I mean, it was lifted. And I don't know what day it was, I don't know what hour it was, but I remember around that time thinking to myself, man, you haven't thought about booze in a long time. Which was probably only a few months or a week. But to me it seemed like forever, because that was a 24-hour-a-day deal. Where was I going to get it? How was I going to get it? Who was I going to get it from? You know, where was Happy Hour? When was the bar going to close? What was which liquor store had a line of credit? All that stuff had disappeared. And the reason I mention that is because this weekend, my daughter participates in competition cheer, and so I found myself in Las Vegas this weekend. Quite an experience. I hadn't been there sober before, at least that I can recall. And you know, we spent some time in the casino. I had to remind myself why I don't gamble. And I did. $40 later, and I was reminded. And that was an inexpensive reminder, but a good one. But here I was sitting at the slot machines, right? And I'm watching these people. I'm watching people, you know, drink the free alcohol. Other things are going on. And I sat there, and it dawned on me that it didn't bother me. I watched all these cheer moms and cheer families get loaded, act silly. And I'm using a very generous word when I say that. But silly. Drama ensued. I mean, you know, your daughter is this, your daughter is that. Well, it is. And I was just sitting there going, wow, I'm glad I don't drink it anymore. I'm glad I don't drink it. You know. But when I left and when I came back home on Monday, I really reflected on what it felt like to be there. And the promises of the program, that I can go anywhere a free man should be able to go without that obsession, without that fear. Now, that's not something I would have done in early recovery or in early sobriety, you know. But I understand today that through the process of working the steps, through being a part of this fellowship, being in service, doing all of these things, that that is a gift that we can expect to give or to get. You know, that beautiful big blue book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was the solution for me. I still find that when I open it and I read something, that wherever it's at in the book, including the stories, that it's speaking to me exactly the way it needs to, exactly the right time. I still have the first big book that my first sponsor gave me, that he handed me. And it's, you know, it's not a secret. He gave it to me and it sat on my coffee table and it was a coaster for my bong for many months before I even opened it. Yeah, it's sacrilegious. But for whatever reason, it sat there. I didn't throw it away. I didn't discard it. You know? And before that day, I truly believe that I did not know what hope was. And it was in the very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Noon Rovers group, that I wandered into, not because I willingly wanted to go, but because probation showed up at my house, and I knew if I stayed there, I was going to get arrested. And for whatever reason, it dawned on me, go to a meeting, they'll never find you there. In that first meeting, I was irritated. There were people in it laughing at stuff that was not funny to me because it was the stuff that I was hurting from at the time. And I bring this up for one reason. I do believe that that was where that seed of hope was planted, because this is what I also recognized through all of that irritation, is that they were happy, that they were laughing about their tragedy. They weren't sitting around crying, feeling sorry for themselves. They were talking about this thing like it had changed their lives. And as they stuck their hand out to me and they welcomed me into this fellowship, regardless of whether I wanted to be there or not, I felt love. By God's grace and mercy, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am among the living today, sober. I have more than a man could possibly deserve. And I like to say that I'm blessed with all that I need, not cursed with all that I want, because I don't do very well with excess. But the miracles continue. 42 years old, I'm pursuing my associate's degree in human services. With that, hopefully continuing on with my education and continuing to not just help people in the field, but learning how to be of service within my community and within my fellowship. I believe today that triangle exists for our salvation, that solution is found in the circle that is around it, that unity, recovery, and service is the key. I've yet to meet anybody in this program or from this program who wasn't willing, that didn't find a better way of life. And that's really all it took. It's been a privilege and an honor to speak to you tonight. Thank you.